Our next presentation is Esteban Rios.
Good afternoon, everyone. Thank you for letting me present during this session. I am a PhD candidate in the agronomy department at the University of Florida, hopefully becoming a doctor next Monday. But today is...
Thank you.
Today I would like to present the work that I've been doing using the annual ryegrass collection from the USDA. So I will talk about the distribution and economic importance of annual ryegrass, also a little bit about the breeding programs, and the germplasm source that I use to conduct my two studies that I'm presenting today. One is about the ploidy level determination, and the other about genetic parameters in the collection. And I will finish by giving you a summary of the data and also the future projects that I'm working with. So annual ryegrass is a cool season forage. It is widely planted around the globe, primarily in temperate regions, but also in subtropical regions. For example, in the United States, it is widely used in the southeastern region primarily for grazing and hay, but there is also an interest for using in turf applications. In the Northwest, there is primarily seed production. There are more than 50,000 hectares planted annually, and with a value of more than $40 million in seed sales only for this species. There is also an interest in using annual ryegrass as a cover crop in the Midwest. And where are the breeding programs located in the U.S.? The public breeding programs are located primarily in the Southeast. However, there are a few private companies in the northwest of the country. At the University of Florida, our program was generated by Dr. Gordon Prime, and we focus primarily on developing high-yielding and crown rust-resistant plants. But what are the genetic sources that these programs can use? And in the United States, it's primarily the collection from the USDA that I requested through the Germplasm Resource Information Network, or GREIN. So basically you can type any species here and you get all the accessions, and I requested the whole collection. But what I noticed is when I obtained the collection, I got 139 plant introductions, that there were only information for ploidy level on 14 of them. And there are diploids and tetraploids annual ryegrasses. That was the goal of my first study, was to determine the ploidy level. And also I wanted to do some phenotypic evaluation, because even though that there were a couple of studies conducted in several locations and several years, most of the variables, and this one that are underlined, they were basically visual ratings with 1 to 5 scale. So I wanted to get more quantitative data, especially because we are interested in developing a genomic selection approach. So besides the 139 plant introductions from GREIN, I also work with 16 experimental lines from our breeding program, as well as 12 commercial cultivars. So the two studies that I'm going to show you now is basically conducted using 167 accessions. The first project was related to the determination of the ploidy level, and also the morphological characterization to differentiate diploids and tetraploid ryegrass. For the ploidy level, I use flow cytometry, and I use sorghum bicolor as the standard, because we know the ploidy level and the genome size. And for the field evaluations, we planted the 167 accessions in 6 blocks and 10 plants per plot. So in our screening, we screen more than 10,000 plants the first year. And we measure 18 morphological and agronomic variables. So this is basically the output from the flow cytometry. And these two graphs are showing the G1 and G2 peaks for sorghum. And the way we determine for annual ryegrass is by comparing the mean position for the x-axis. The x-axis here is basically the amount of DNA found in the cells. And in the y-axis, you get the number of cells with that given amount of DNA. So in the graphic A, you can see this is a diploid annual ryegrass, while in graphic B, this is a tetraploid annual ryegrass. So with this, we determined that 140 accessions were diploid, while 27 were tetraploids. So now we already published a paper, and researchers on plant breeding, they can go and select, for example, plants based on their origin, based on the year of the introduction, but also after we determine the ploidy level, they can go and select diploid or tetraploid plants from the collection. Something that was interesting, when I basically averaged the genome size by different types, so from the green collection, you can see that some of them are wild, some of them are cultivar, unknown experimentals, and cultivated. We noticed that in general, the wild types, they had bigger genomes. So now our question is, does this bigger genome size in the wild types relate to larger genetic variability? And this is a project that I conducted the last summer at the Nobel Foundation in collaboration with Dr. Saha. But for time constraints, I cannot show the results today. But we are going to be having publishing soon the papers for the genetic diversity using molecular markers. So now moving to the morphological study, I'm presenting here only 8 of the variables. And in general, you can see that the difference between diploids and tetraploids was quite drastic. In general, all the tetraploids had bigger cells and bigger organs. For example, for seed weight, for leaf size, for the guard cell length, and also for economically important traits such as plant biomass. In general, tetraploid plants tended to yield more than diploid plants. No difference were found for heading date, so meaning that there are early and late accessions at both diploid levels. So I mentioned that we measured the stomate size, and this is a very good and very high throughput, not high throughput, but very rapid methodology that you can use. We basically painted the leaves with nail polish, and then we peeled that and put it in the microscope and took a picture. And you can really see the huge difference between the both ploidy levels. And I think this can be transferred to many other grass species. And it's a very cheap methodology compared to doing flow cytometry. So the paper was published in Crop Science. And we also submitted all the information to the green system. So now any researcher or plant breeder can go and select the plant introductions based on the ploidy level. So in my second study, we wanted to estimate variance components and genetic parameters using the morphological data. So as I said, we evaluated in 2014 the entire collection, but then I made selections already in order to plan only 35 diploid accessions, again in 6 blocks and 10 space plants per plot. The reason is because the experiment was too large in 2014, and also I was interested in selecting diploid plants in order to create a training population for genomic selection. So I analyzed the data using kind of 3 populations. One was using the whole 167 genotypes or accessions, then also only green accessions with the 139 and only diploid plants, and you will see the results later. We analyzed the data in ASRemo using linear mixed models. So we consider the genotypes to be a random effect, so we can calculate the variance components estimated related to the genetics. With that, we calculated broad sense heritability, that is basically the ratio between the genetic and the total phenotypic variance. Also, genetic correlation among traits, and this is a very important genetic parameter, because if 2 traits are highly correlated, but one of them is very expensive or very difficult to measure, we can make indirect selection by just measuring the other trait. And finally, we did a genotype by year correlation for those 35 diploid accessions that we had data for both years. So moving to the results, this is basically the broad sense heritability in the y-axis, and this is for 9 traits. And we have the 3 populations, let's say the whole population is the first column, so it's 167 lines. The second is the only green population, and then considering only diploid plants. This first column is for flowering, meaning that either the plants flower in Florida that year or did not flower. and only 113 accessions flower in that year. So the other ones would consider them as biannuals and not true annuals in Florida at least. So from that 113 accessions, we measure all, after flowering, we harvest it and we measure all the traits related to plant biomass and tiller size and number of tillers. Something that I would like to point out is there is a wide range of heritability for most of the traits, but for flowering and for heading day, for example, these are very good candidates for doing GWAS because there is a very large variability. And you can see in this picture, for example, that this PI is basically ready for seed harvest when the other ones are still growing vegetatively. Also, something very important that I would like to point out is for rust and for these three traits, for flag leaf width, tiller size, and leaf to stem ratio, we can see that when we use the entire collection, we get the higher genetic variability. And then it decreases when we use only the green collection and the diploids. And this is because when we use the entire collection, we are including the experimental lines and the cultivars that they were selected for, let's say, bigger plants, higher number, larger tillers, and also for disease resistance. So this was very important because my goal was to create a training population for genomic selection using a very wide range of cultivars or accessions. So for the genetic correlations, this is a very large graph, but I would like to point out that we observe genetic negative and positive correlation between traits. For example, for heading date and biomass, we got a positive 0.5 almost, meaning that in general, late cultivars tend to yield more. And that is because they produce a larger number of tillers. Here is heading day and tillers is 0.66. And also they have larger crowns because they produce more tillers, of course. Also, there was a very high correlation between biomass and plant height, that is here, 0.82. So that was the case that I was telling you before, that now we can select, make indirect selections for biomass just by measuring the plant height, that is a more straightforward and cheaper for phenotype. For the genotype by year correlations, we also observe a very wide range for that. And for example, for the first set of traits with high correlations, that means that the breeding values for 2014 and 15 were highly consistent. So for these traits, we only need to phenotype for in 1 year or in one location, let's say, and we are pretty sure that we are making good selections. However, for the other traits, the breeding values for 1 year don't really match the breeding values for the second year. So for this set of traits, we will need to phenotype them, the populations, at least in 2 locations or 2 years in order to make selections. So in summary, I successfully determined the ploidy level for the green collection, and we observed that in general, tetraploids tend to yield more and be more productive than diploid lines. We estimated the variance components and the genetic parameters for the first time for the collection, and we identified very relevant genetic diversity for economically important traits such as heading date and plant biomass in the collection. All the information for the ploidy level was already submitted to Green, and the second paper is going to be published soon, and after that I will submit the information as well. So what is next? I already conducted the study at the Nobel Foundation, but I will be publishing that soon. That is, I extracted a DNA from 960 individuals from the 167 accessions, meaning that we are going to be able to look at the genetic diversity within and among populations. And we used 48 EST-SSRs, and that was in collaboration with Dr. Saha at the Nobel Foundation. Also, my goal is to create a family or population-based genomic selection approach because, as you know, ryegrass is an outcrossing species. So it's not going to be feasible to do genomic selection using individual plants. So that was my goal, why I evaluated the population, was to create a very diverse training population for genomic selection. And finally, I'm working on chromosome doubling because I am interested to see What is the effect of changing or increasing the number or increasing the ploidy? And so once I get tetraploid plants, I will be able to look at the same population at the diploid and at the tetraploid level. With that, I would like to thank you for your attention, and I would like to say my funding sources and the turf breeding program and the forage breeding program land members for helping me to collect all the data. Thank you. Yes, there are interspecific hybrids. So the question is if we can cross perennial and annual ryegrass, and the answer is yes. We don't use very much. We don't use perennial ryegrass in Florida because it's too hot during summer, so the plants basically don't survive. Annual ryegrass is overseeded in warm season grasses. That's what we use, the annual species. Yes.
One of the criticisms that's often thrown at plant breeders is that place plant data may not transfer the swards. Which ones of those characteristics you think are most likely to be fully transferable to swards, and which ones might not be quite as much?
So the question is related to that we conducted this study using space plants and not plots, and which traits we are going to be transferring to a sward condition compared to individual plants. And that is the one that is going to be independent, I think, from the sward is heading date and flowering. And then all the other ones, especially the number of tillers and the size of the crown, is going to be very difficult to correlate in a sward condition. But that's why we are trying. My goal is to develop a family or population-based genomic selection so we can collect data in a plot level and not having to do it at individual level.
I have a question.
Yes.
When you did a flow cytometry, knowing the tetraploid and diploid, you have two groups.
Yes.
If you now do a box plot of regard cell size, my question is that, do you think those whisker plots live overlap or just stick?
No. I didn't show, but it's in the paper, the correlation. And there is no overlapping. So that's why I think, for all the other traits that we measure, the phenotypic traits, there is some overlapping, but for the stomach size, there is not.
Was that your discovery, or was that somewhere documented in other species or other research?
No, it's been documented before. Yes. Yeah, you can. There are other things like the pollen size is also very common.
Most of the green database is included for the species, basically for ryegrass, or perennial ryegrass. Some database is referring to the diploid and tetraploid. Yeah. It matches perfectly between the new data and the green database? Or what? If there is any difference by ploidy level? Because we found also the same. I mean, just using microscopy, we were expecting that supposed to be a diploid, but this is a tetraploid.
Right.
So
the question is if I saw some consistency in ploidy data for what was previously in green and our data, and the answer is yes. But there was only data for 14 accessions. And they were basically cultivars that were, released in the 90s, and they are in the collection. So there wasn't any data for the collection before the 90s. So that was the first time we were reporting that. But yeah, it matched for the 14 that were there.
Thank you. when you show this, the various component analysis, it seems to only show the data results in 2014.
Yeah, I didn't have the time to put all you
so
know,
you
for
the, so the whole data
yes.
set is still to fit it together, right?
Yeah.
You could imagine that some of the blocks and vulnerabilities go up.
Some of them were up, some were maintained for both years, some others were a little bit lower,
okay.
but I have everything, I mean, for both years.
Okay.
The reason I showed 2014 is because, and that was when I had the entire collection.
Yes.
Then in 15, I already made selections based on year one.
Yes.
Some attributes that Green has, or the gene bank collection has, they are coming from the 60s, 70s, and 80s.
Yes.
But I don't know if you use some new cultivars, make the comparison with old cultivars. Yeah. It's
We can go back and so there are the first introduction was in 1948, but I think from what I read, this is when they started. I mean, in the 90s they started introducing basically making available for Green the cultivars. So there are some cultivars that they were coming from Europe and some from Japan, but not many. So I didn't really look at the data in a temporal perspective.